Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land to Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 29th day of April. It's the last trading day of the month. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Bruce Sherrick, the director of the Center for Farmland Research here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, will join us to discuss the financial health of the farm and what land values might look like as we move into the fall season. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, that with Eric Snodgrass of Agrible Inc. from right here in Urbana-Champaign. On this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hey, by the way, thanks so much to everybody who made a donation to our spring fund drive. We did make our $90,000 just before the end of the day yesterday. Thank you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hear what the numbers finished up like in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit up 3.25 in the May at $3.90 and a quarter. July at 3.91 and 3/4, a half higher in December at 3.95 and a quarter, up 0.75 cents. March contract down 0.25 at 4.02 and 3/4. Soy complex now, May beans up 3 cents, $10.21. July at 10.29 and 3/4, up 2.25. August at $10.30 and a half, up 2, and November beans at $10.07 and 3/4 cents, down 3/4. January down a half at $10.09 even. Bean oil futures at $32.88, down 17 cents, and the bean meal for the day at $3.32.10. That's up $1.50. Wheat futures, May contract up 2.5 at $4.78. July at $4.88 and a half. For the soft red up 3. That's the harvest month. The hard red at $5.47, up 4.75. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the April at $124 even, $1.15 higher. May feeder cattle at $140.77 and a half, or down 50 cents, and the August at $140.17 and a half, or up 37 and a half. Lean hogs for the day in the June contract at $81.62 and a half, or 85 cents higher. The June live cattle, by the way, at $114.80, are unchanged on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. My personal thanks to all the folks that called in support of agricultural programming over the last week. We did make our goal all the way above $90,000 for the spring fund drive, and we all thank you so much. It's a part of the service, and you help us out so very, very much.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. June crude oil today at $45.97 a barrel, down 6 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.54 and a half a gallon. They're a penny higher. Gasoline on the RBOB trading the May at $1.59 and 3 tenths, 4 tenths of a cent lower. And heating oil is down a penny and 7 tenths. That's diesel fuel at $1.38 and 7 tenths of a cent. Natural gas, 8 and 8 tenths of a cent higher at $2.16 and 6 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones and Industrial average at 17,617, 144 points lower. The U.S. dollar at 93.045, down 0.682. And gold futures at $1,291.10, up $25.60 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. This evening, the National Weather Service is calling for a low tonight of 50 degrees with a 40% chance of showers after 1 a.m. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms, a high of 61, east winds at 15 to 18, gusting to 24. It will rain most likely tomorrow. Chance of rainfall set at 80% in the area. Tomorrow evening, 50% chance of showers, cloudy, a low 50 degrees again. Northeast winds at about 14 miles an hour. And then Sunday, a 40% chance of rainfall, cloudy and a high of 62 on a northeast wind at 14 to 16, gusting to 21. Sunday evening, rainfall, cloudy and a gradually becoming partly clear, 44 degrees northeast wind at 8 to 14. And on Monday, mostly sunny and a high of 63 degrees. Tuesday, mostly sunny, and Wednesday, mostly sunny as well.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this last trading day for the month of April. It is the 29th. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Great to be with you again, Todd. Good to be here in Atchison with the cold weather coming back.
Yeah, I know. Kind of amazing. We've got a good start to the growing season, I suppose, and now we have to suffer a little bit. But these kind of conditions aren't terrible. It could be much, much worse. Hey, let's talk about something a little different this afternoon. Can we talk about the Federal Reserve? I know that you've been watching it and what monetary policy looks like in the United States. It appears that they are waiting still to raise interest rates.
Yeah, I would say that this week as a whole was a very favorable and supportive macroeconomic week for the commodity sector. Not only, as you said, did the Fed maintain its monetary policy, but the Bank of Japan really surprised the market and did not go deeper into negative interest rates. And these two policies allowed China to actually raise its daily fixed rate on the yuan to the biggest level on a daily basis since all the way back in 2005, where they made that big jump, over a decade ago. And I think two things happened here. Not only was it against market expectations, but I think it also signals to the trade in the financial sector that China does not want to lose capital flows that they've been able to get back here the last 45 or 60 days. And that's very important to the commodities because it should keep the dollar softer, and it would be less of a threat that emerging market outflows would resume again. It's interesting to note that now in the bond market and the dollar currency markets, in my opinion, we've completely priced out anything in terms of a June rate hike for the Federal Reserve. Many commentators and analysts now thinking it's going to go all the way to September. So I felt like as the week closed out that the Fed did feed the commodity bull, and the Chinese followed up with that. And if I'm looking for some type of correction to be generated in the short term, I would be looking at the meal market technically and from a standpoint of the meal in the futures market being able to catch up within $5 or $6 a ton of the Brazil and Argentine export prices at their ports and then at upriver for Argentina. So that's kind of how I saw the week macroeconomically.
You mean that meal would need to gain another $5 a ton?
Well, we're only about $5 away in the futures market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange compared to Brazil and Argentina's cash price. So we essentially gained $20 a ton in the futures here in Chicago in the United States, while their prices essentially stayed flat. So we've closed the gap, in other words, in futures price. So between the overbought conditions in the meal chart and then us closing the gap, which we needed to do with the Argentine meal especially, I would say I'd put the Argentine meal and the meal in general on maybe a little bit softer footing than even the macroeconomics at this stage.
Is it the U.S. dollar or crude oil that we need to watch, or is it both?
It's both. I think, you know, when I look at the monthly changes, we had June crude oil up about 20%, meal up about 20%. We're still running at about an 85% positive correlation between the crude oil and the soybean complex, and that's a 12-week correlation, Todd. So we saw it today. You know, if you wanted to pick one thing out there to watch, it was for the soybeans. I think it was probably the weaker crude oil market, followed up with the weaker S&P equity market, and that took the luster off the beans, while it did not off the meal so much. So I think you've got a very strong correlation between the beans and the crude oil. The crude oil, very strong correlation, negative correlation between it and the dollar.
Well, today wasn't a big up day in Chicago. The week did finish higher, and so did the month for corn.
Yeah, and we had, what, I think a 7% gain in December corn and about a 9% gain on the month in November beans. And we did, you know, I talked about these two numbers last week, 385 Dec corn, 985 Nov beans. Those were going to be big issues if we went through those, especially after the Federal Reserve spoke. We held those. We tested them, and we tested the meal trend line. So on a weekly basis, you cannot argue that the technicals look real good for the new crop. And I think they're probably even improving fundamentally this week for the corn versus the beans, mainly because we've dialed in a lot of drop in Argentine bean production. And we're still now starting to get a little bit wetter forecast underneath us. Noontime models were a lot wetter for those farmers east of the Mississippi River, which some of them are very eager to get some rain, I know. But it should promote, I think, maybe the continued correction in that bean-corn ratio for new crop. And obviously those export sales in corn, they did a lot of good in supporting the idea that South America is essentially out of corn right now, and we're getting the sourcing for corn out of the Asian market now.
Are you of a mind that corn will gain on soybeans in that case, or that soybeans will come down to corn's level?
I do think corn should gain, especially in the new crop. I think that ratio, I think we corrected about 1.5% in the bean-corn new crop ratio, Nov versus Dec, and I would look for that to continue at this stage.
What are you telling producers when they ask you what to do with new crop?
I think the biggest thing probably is if the macroeconomic side is supportive and the crude oil doesn't want to take any kind of sharp break on some black swan unknown event out there that we can't see right now. I think we get up towards those highs of that 1023.5 level in November beans. If that contains the November beans before the May report, I think catch-up sales would be wise in the soybean complex. You're just not quite there in the corn yet as far as covering all your costs and getting profitable, especially with some of these basis levels. I would also say on the basis, the old crop basis contracts that a lot of us recommended out there, I think they are getting turned into actual cash sales by producers, and certainly I'm recommending that at this point to start peddling those basis contracts and old crop corn. So I think we're letting go of a lot of corn out there, which is medium term more friendly for the corn market.
And long term?
I think long term, it goes back to what the investor markets do. I mean, if you take weather out of the picture, corn and wheat are still going to be highly influenced by the export demand market. That's going to be highly influenced by the dollar. I'm not of the opinion that the Ukrainian crop is getting bigger like the USDA ag attaché wrote and some of the European analysts wrote this week. I think it's just too early, and there's quite a bit of heat coming in the corn belt for the Ukraine right now. So I'm of the view that the world soybean numbers are going up, production numbers are more likely to go up, whereas the world corn numbers are more likely to go down.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, the job of passing the annual funding bill for the nation's waterways is supposed to be fairly easy. That's why it's one of the earliest things taken up by lawmakers in any session. But Waterways Council Senior Vice President Deborah Calhoun says the effort is anything but easy this year.
In a bit of a surprise move, there was an issue raised by Senator Tom Cotton regarding the purchase of heavy water from Iran. So that needs to be dealt with and worked out in order for the bill to advance. And, you know, if it does not and they can't come to some sort of compromise, then it will, not be able to move forward. The bill is basically dead.
And any locks modernization funding, key to improving Midwest grain equipment and chemical shipping, would have to wait until later in the year. On a more positive note, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee passed the latest Water Resources Development Act, or WRDA, without the exorbitant new lockage fees.
In terms of lockage fees and tolls to, you know, potentially finance a P3, a public-private partnership on the Illinois waterway, that was not included in this bill. We don't expect it to be included in the House bill. Again, we're not opposed to P3s for the waterways, but ones that don't make sense, like this one that would have added, you know, as many as 8 tolls on the Illinois waterway, could have been crippling to those shippers.
Midwest Corn Growers Association, Soybean and Oilseed Groups, the Fertilizer Institute, ADM, Cargill, and Caterpillar all wrote lawmakers objecting to the fees of as much as $20,000 for a 15-barge tow on each of the 8 new locks. In the meantime, the bill would prevent Inland Waterways Trust Fund capital projects from being deauthorized if they fail to get funding for 5 years, while the long-delayed Olmsted project is completed between Illinois and Kentucky. Well, let's move out of Washington, D.C. to Kansas City, where the Federal Reserve Bank there issued a report on the farm economy that said farm lending remains brisk, but agricultural credit conditions have deteriorated as repayment rates have gone down. The report also says that banks are increasingly using real estate as collateral and raising interest rates. The report says farmland values have remained relatively strong, but a poor outlook for cash flow could continue to pressure a large share of farm borrowers, particularly those who are highly leveraged. And finally today, drier weather has returned to Argentina and should continue through May. The weather advisor to the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange said Argentina has 21 million hectares of soybeans. 7 million are fine, 7 million are wet but not swamped, and in the other 7 million, growers have to wait for flooding to recede before they try to harvest. He said the waterlogged fields would be at least partially lost. Several experts estimate crop losses in Argentina at 5 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, this is the third year of a financial crunch on the farm. It follows on the heels of a series of tremendous seasons since 2006. The extra money from then is now starting to run out. The financial stress in the ag sector may really begin to show this fall if low commodity prices persist, says the director of the TIA Kreff Center for Farmland Research on the University of Illinois campus. His name is Bruce Sherrick.
It's already affecting cash rents and land prices some, but again, not nearly as much as the, you know, on a percentage basis, not as much as the change in kind of current cash prices or futures prices for delivery within this year, at least.
Sherrick says a couple of things have happened which explain this buffering. The last several years have been really quite good for agricultural incomes, so farmers have a pretty strong balance sheet. It's easier to weather a downturn, says Sherrick, after a few good years than a bad year after a few bad years.
We are seeing clearly kind of working capital crunches starting to hit people, and I think this is the first year that that's really material, and lenders are seeing upticks in volume and so on. As we've adjusted to more normal stocks, we're kind of into a period where we think this might be the last year people can really just stand for what's going on without making some major changes in either how they manage cash rents or inputs or financial structures.
This does not mean the price of farmland will plummet. Long-term interest rates are very, very low, and the rate of turnover in farmland is super small. Money is cheap, and farmland for sale, it's scarce.
If you look at the number of acres that sell, maybe around 2% transfer per year in the what you would think of as agriculturally intense states. But only about half of that is even arm's length. So within family, transfers account for maybe roughly half of that. With a very thin market, you can't just buy and sell to try to get out of transitory things in prices or income. And so thin markets help buffet or slow down the response of farmland values to changes in short-term income. And then at the low cap rates or the low interest rates, people are willing to pay fairly high multiples. There's good demand still for folks who want long-term investments, fairly stable cash returns. If you can rent, say, 3% for perhaps 3% of the asset value per year on a cash basis.
Farmland does not look like such a dire situation then when you step back from it. It also has shown very reliably, says Bruce Sherrick, a positive correlation with inflation. Even if the price of commodities stay relatively low, it may be that the price of farmland as an owned asset will help farms stay afloat. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to talk about the weather forecast. Let's start with what happened this week. A lot of severe weather across the nation and some in our part of the world.
Yeah, we certainly got hit in the southern half of Illinois last week on Tuesday. Great big squalling of thunderstorms kind of raced from St. Louis across the southern tip of Illinois. And it did quite a bit of wind damage. You know, that storm system was a part of a much larger storm system that produced a pretty big outbreak of severe weather across the Great Plains. Thankfully, we didn't see a ton of tornadoes. In fact, 2016, we're actually down on tornadoes in terms of the average number. But where we are certainly doing well, if you want to consider it well, is with hail reports. And last week's event was big, over 200 reports of large hail. And so, yeah, it was certainly one of those midweek nasty severe weather events that pushed across a big section of the United States. You know, if you were in Illinois, we had some widespread precipitation, but really a lot of the storm cell precipitation was really hit or miss. So some fields may have gotten over an inch, while others, you know, just got a little bit from the bigger system that moved through. But I'll tell you, where it was wet was in the Great Plains. You know, you look back over the last 30-plus days, and a lot of the major moisture stress across the U.S. has been found in the Great Plains. And this past system added another 2 inches of rain to a large section of the northern parts of the plains. Now, what's that mean? Well, we're kind of focusing right now on planting, but we're also seeing about winter wheat, what winter wheat is doing. We've got the big Kansas wheat tour coming up, and I've been talking to those guys, and they're all packing their mud boots. You know, they're prepared to get out there in the mud. And, you know, this much precip where we grow a lot of wheat here in Kansas, parts of Oklahoma, a little bit in Texas, and, you know, parts of Colorado as well. It's going to produce some big yields. We got to just keep our eye on what the quality is going to be, but certainly some big yields. So yeah, that's what the past week has really been doing to us.
Big yields with the rainfall. However, wheat does get diseased when it's rained on, so we'll be looking out for that too, and that may be the quality problem. Come closer to home, farmers would like to stay in the field, but I'm thinking more about the Illinois Marathon on Saturday. What kind of event day will we have?
Yeah, so unfortunately last year, remember, we had the storms on that day and some lightning in the area. And I hate to say it, but this is going to be another one of those washout Saturdays. There's going to be a large kind of shield of precipitation moving out ahead of a low-pressure system in Kansas, and it's going to be spreading quite a bit of rain over the area. I'm a little bit concerned about the severe threat, not so much in Champaign, but south of Interstate 72, actually following all the way down through the mid and lower Mississippi River valleys. That's our next kind of chance for severe weather. And there's some today in Texas, but that's going to move. It's going to move to the east and hit this area on Saturday. So yeah, the marathon, I hate to say it, it's going to be cool and it's going to be wet. You know, at least we won't have runners getting overheated, but they're going to have wet shoes as they're kind of moving through. You know, that rain actually is going to spread from Nebraska all the way to Ohio and from Illinois all the way south to Louisiana. So we're looking at a lot of rain this weekend and really getting to Monday. But, you know, you talk about farmers getting back into the fields. You know, looking at the longer term thing, we kind of set up where we have a northwesterly flow aloft in the jet stream. And what that typically means is we tend to have drier days this time of year when we have that flow. So I'm looking at next week and not really seeing an abundance of precipitation, may have several dry days in a row. So, you know, we're more than 50% planted in Illinois. And so to see how this dry period kind of gets some guys in the field and gets them finished up could be a good thing, as long as it stays dry long enough that the weekend rains can really settle and kind of get out of their way. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at in the short term.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.